Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In a last-ditch effort to save Bryce, Hunt plummets from a helicopter in order to shield her from the brimstone missiles. His ravaged body and sacrifice inspire Bryce to call for help. When no one heeds her call, Bryce's and Hunt's final moments draw near, until a familiar voice reminds Bryce to light it up. Bryce throws herself into the drop, and to everyone's astonishment, plummets lower and lower into her power. Reconnected with Danica, Bryce makes her peace and races towards her future with Hunt. In the final battle's aftermath, Bryce and Hunt are both met with threats and rewards, reminding us that their story is far from over.
The views expressed by the hosts are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author.
This podcast is a discussion, shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
The interpretations presented in this podcast are just a few of the many possibilities. Listeners are encouraged to read along and share their own analysis of the text.
Though the hosts speak mostly within the constraints of this book, series and extended universe spoilers may be discussed with or without warning.
Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, depression, self-harm, and death, will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
This is part one of this week's episode. Stick around for part two, which releases on Thursday.
Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a podcast where we deep dive into the writing of your favorite novels.
This season, we are exploring Sarah J. Maas's first installment in the Crescent City series.
This is Jack.
And I'm Amy.
This week, we're discussing chapters 90 through the epilogue in A House of Earth and Blood.
The question we ask ourselves this week is, how do we feel at the end of this novel?
And the themes that we'll see in this section include healing and setup.
I can't believe we're at the end.
Right? We've been working on this since November.
Yeah. And I've had such bad senioritis for the last 3 weeks.
Same.
We start chapter 90 with only a sense of uncertainty. Bryce has used her starlight to close the portal in the Heart Gate. And her starlight is keeping the demons at bay. What she doesn't know is that Hunt and company are on their way to try to save her and to help her. However, like I said, Bryce doesn't know that. She doesn't know what the status is of the other gates. She just is like, did this work?
Mm-hmm.
Did I do it? Quote, it had worked. Somehow it had worked. Maybe she had made a difference. Not much longer now for help to come or for her end. She didn't know. But it would be soon. Whichever way it ended, Bryce knew it would be soon. You know, despite this uncertainty about what's going to happen next, there's almost this power in the finality of it. Mm-hmm. Of just like, thank God it's almost over. Whichever way it goes, I don't care. It just needs to be over.
She's tapped out. Yeah. She's like, I'm done. I've done what I can. I know there's like 6 more gates. I can't right now.
Right. She'll try to keep moving forward. But what that forward looks like and how to get there, who knows?
Yeah. I want to look at this particular part of the quote. Quote, maybe this had made a difference. Maybe she had made a difference. Now, in the previous chapters and everything leading up to this, like, Bryce has not claimed her power of being starborn. And she kept saying, like, this isn't me. You know, it's just light. It's no big deal. And now we're seeing her say, like, maybe it had made a difference. Maybe she has made a difference. And in this section, we're going to see some ownership from her when it comes to her power.
Because she's finally learning that it doesn't have to be a bad thing.
Yeah. No. Power, light, saving people. It doesn't have to be a bad thing. It
doesn't have to be a bad thing. At this point, we switch over to Hunt's point of view, and he's in Fury's helicopter, and he's honed in on Bryce. Everything he sees is Bryce-coded, in my opinion. Quote, Hunt just kept his eyes on the star-filled horizon. The city was a dark shadow, interrupted only by a faint glowing in its heart, the old square gate, Bryce. So let's break these images down. A star-filled horizon. Bryce is a star.
Yep.
She has starlight. The dark shadow of the city, like maybe Hunt is the dark shadow,
mm-hmm.
with a faint glowing in its heart.
Mm-hmm.
Who's Hunt's heart? Bryce.
Mm-hmm.
And the old square, which is where Bryce lives and works. And it's the piece of city that belongs to her. And I just love all of this because he is just like, nothing else matters except Bryce. And yeah. you see it in every description.
Yeah. And SJM hasn't done these types of metaphors. I mean, I know she's done metaphors and we've called them out, but like just this, you know, like seeping with metaphor type of description. And I love this whenever she does that. And when you think about horizons, you can also like kind of associate them with the future and, you know, working towards the horizon and what's to come for tomorrow. And again, Bryce is also Hunt's future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it.
I love her metaphors.
I do too. I think this
symbolism, all of it.
Yeah. I think this last set of chapters is rife with symbolism and metaphor that's really subtle and is really impactful. But even then, I say that when I was analyzing it, I'm like, oh, it's everywhere. But I've never noticed it until now. So yeah. I really appreciate it.
Yep.
There are moments throughout this end sequence where the characters whose point of views we're in think something that is just wrong and ironic. But and we've seen that before in this whole narrative. However, to me, it's kind of tragic right now because of how high the stakes are. The characters continue to try to have hope because they have to, right? They're in dire straits. You have to hope that something good is on the other side or help is coming because how else are you supposed to survive this?
Yeah.
But, you know, SJM in her good old way keeps taking all of that away. When Fury says her helicopter radar is picking up war machines in the West, Hunt thinks, quote, thank fuck, someone else was coming to help after all. Psych. It's the Asterion Guard with brimstone missiles here to destroy everything. Quote, the Asteri had sent someone to deal with the demons and with Bryce. And I thought in this moment, this was an unsaid metaphor where the demon are vermin come to be exterminated and Bryce is no better than them. She is just as much a pest to the Asteri and they are the pest. They've sent the pest control.
Right. Pest control, but a little aggressive. Here's a book three question, spoiler. Why is the Asteri trying to kill Bryce when they make it very clear that they absolutely need her?
I don't know the answer. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe they think it's better to get rid of her and find another way instead of, and in the process, losing the horn.
Yeah, because I don't think that, like, I don't think that, like, at this point, SJM doesn't know where it's going.
Right.
That the Asteri are trying to get to Prithian.
Right. I agree. So, I think, and it's very, I feel like it's clear at the end. Maybe not. It feels obvious to me that the Asteri would want the horn and SJM would know that. But I could be wrong.
Yeah. I mean, like, she said that when she started this series, I think that when I remember an interview, she said that she had the visual of Bryce landing in Prithian.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how she kind of like built. And then she had the image of like, you know, the city that had all this Zootopia stuff. And then she worked from it. So, I mean, there's a world where she might not have known that the Asteri were the Daglin.
Yeah.
At this point. Who knows? I'll ask it to my list of questions for her whenever I one day get to meet her and I'm not busy trying to get her to like me.
One day.
The brimstone. Let's talk a little bit about those. Quote, they were pure magic made by the Asterion Guard, a combination of their angelic powers of wind and rain and fire into a hyper-concentrated entity bound with first light and fired through machinery. They were laced with spells to slow healing. And I like to think that this is a linked to modern warfare.
Yeah,
absolutely. And you know, like, I know she's making this, like, sound so intense and, you know, it is because it's filled with magic. But at the same time, like, you know, you think about, like, modern missiles and chemical warfare and all that stuff. Like, I think I just do appreciate the moment of, like, making us horrified by something that is so close to reality.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure, you know, when tanks were first invented or, you know, the missile or the H-bomb or atom bomb was first dropped on Japan, like, I hope people were horrified.
Yeah.
Because that is terrifying. But now, for us nowadays, it's run of the mill.
Yeah, it's unfortunately.
Yeah.
Hi, guys. Welcome back to Autumn King Truth or Talk, where I'm here to talk to you about the Autumn King. I like, again, let's all put on our tinfoil hats and allow this for me. This is where I look for signs. And you know what? I'm gonna admit this first one may not be the best sign, but I'm still gonna quote it. Quote, "The Autumn King's voice cracked through the speakers. No one at the Imperial Command is answering our calls." I like to imagine the cracked is like his voice cracking. And I can accept that maybe it's not. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's like, you know, the description of like
static.
Like it's here. But you know, he still doesn't want to make, he doesn't want Bryce to die. And we're only going to see more of that.
I will give it to you. That's why I wrote nothing about it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And because I was also pro Autumn King.
Yeah.
And this end sequence is a big part of it.
Yep.
I do want to acknowledge that there are certain things Esham is really good at keeping consistent. And the one thing we see here when the brimstone missiles land in the city is the sensitivity of Bryce's ears, which I felt was a nice touch and brings us into the present where she's at. When the brimstones land in the city, yes, she's pinned, but instead of pain or panic that is registering, it's the ringing in her ears that causes disorientation. We've seen multiple times before how sensitive her ears are, and Hunt is very well aware of it and is always very careful about her ears. So it's important that we see it here too. Quote, "Her ears were roaring, buzzing, shrieking." And it reminds me of the bomb in The White Raven.
Yeah, yeah.
But Hunt isn't here to help her yet.
Or at the gun range when he was worried about her, you know, head, like her ears in the gun range. Like it has been a constant theme of like her sensitive little baby delicate fairy ears.
Yes. And I guess what I meant by that was at the start of the novel, White Raven bombing, Hunt and Bryce were not on good terms. Mm-hmm. Her ears were sensitive. They were bleeding. And that's when he learned to take care of them.
Yep.
He took care of them at the gun range. Now, since Hunt's betrayal and their separation, he's not there to protect her anymore. And her, so her ears feel the effects of that.
Okay.
But he's coming down to save her.
Yeah. In a really fucked up way.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to see a little bit more of Bryce owning her powers. I'm going to be pointing it out throughout the episode. Here's another instance. Quote, "The gate still stood, still shielded her with its light." Her light, technically. Again, here she is making the link between it and her. She is the light. That is hers.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Something I'm going to talk about at the end of the episode is a change of identity, particularly for Hunt. But I can see that taking place here for Bryce as well.
Yeah.
That she's accepting a part of her identity that she's not reckoned with before.
Yep.
We've talked before about the trauma that Bryce endures in this whole sequence and how it makes sense towards Bryce's attitude towards saving humans in the future books. And I want to continue to bring it back to this because the more I read this and analyzed it, the more that impact really spoke to me and I could really see the echoes of it in the later books. Quote, "The Asterion Guard had blindly fired brimstone over the walls to either destroy the gates or kill the monsters, but they'd fired on their own people, not caring who they hit. Bryce took deep, steadying breaths. It did nothing to settle her. She tried again, fingernails cracking on the concrete, but short of cutting off her foot, she wasn't getting free." First of all, the pain I felt in my fingers reading that.
I know.
But also, no one's safe. And I think Bryce is horrified by the fact that they don't care if they're killing other angels or Fae or wealthy Vanir.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to die.
And that's so set up for book two, where she is ready to take them on. Like, she sees the monsters the Asteri really are.
Mm-hmm. It's at this point when Hunt decides he has to dive to save Bryce because there's another missile about to launch and it's going to land in the Old Square. And it's so dramatic, and I love it. So I want to talk about the drama from a couple different points of view. First, the brimstone missiles themselves. Quote, eager to unleash angelic ruin upon the helpless city. So when I think of angels and angelic, being angelic, it's supposed to be good and pure and helpful. But instead, it's a complete juxtaposition to the reality. That, and it reminds me of Pollux. And the irony that is Pollux of being an angel with pure white wings, but loves to torture.
Yeah.
Like, SJM had so much fun
writing
that character. I also want to point out in this moment that Hunt sees the city as a thing and not as a collection of the people within it. And I think that's important to his mindset and the mindset we're going to see from him in future books.
Absolutely.
Because nothing in this city matters except Bryce. But the fact of the matter is there are millions of people in this city.
Yeah, it's he could not care. I mean, I don't want to say he couldn't care less, but he doesn't care about them.
No.
Like, he doesn't want anyone to die, but he would rather everyone die and save Bryce.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and if a missile's going to get launched, there's only one person he's saving.
Yep.
And it's not himself. As I was saying, Hunt only has eyes for Bryce. Quote, the old square and glowing gate at its heart became visible, the only signal he needed. Ugh, gives me chills. I don't know why. But he's also a drama king, or at least the narrative is. Quote, there was no hesitation in Hunt, no fear, a one-way ticket, his last flight.
I know.
But it builds up so much, like, angst and anticipation in the reader too.
It's
so good.
It's so dramatic because you're almost like, I don't know, hoping for something else.
Yeah.
And his plan is literally just take it.
Yeah.
Like, you're almost like, okay, his last flight, so that he can grab her and run, so that he can do something. And it is such a dramatic buildup for such a dramatic payoff.
Yeah. Yeah. He's accepted death.
Yeah.
Now, and you're like, no.
No. Well, here's my question. Why didn't he just fire at the missiles with his lightning and exploded in the air?
That's a great question. Does he do that in later books?
No, but he could.
I wonder if let's say that happens and Hunt shoots a missile with his lightning midair over a city. Does all of that rain down on the city and cause harm anyway?
Yeah, but you wouldn't get the explosion.
I have no idea.
Like, we do that with, granted, our missiles don't have magic in it, but we do that with missiles where we have them explode in the air.
Yeah.
I just needed one sentence to explain why he couldn't do that.
That's fair. Yeah, great point.
Thank you.
We then move on into chapter 91, and we see the reflection of Hunt's thoughts in Bryce's own thoughts, particularly related to the Heart Gate. At least, again, this is my interpretation. Bryce knows that she should be dead because of the brimstone missile. She assumes, quote, the gate must have shielded her somehow. And in this moment, I thought, just like Bryce would assume her own heart would be capable of shielding herself from harm, which is not the case. Bryce's poor heart needs a shield, and it's not herself, it's Hunt.
Yeah.
When Bryce realizes she's been protected by Hunt, her reaction is as if her heart has been ripped from her. Quote, her head emptied out. A scream broke from her, rising so deep that she wondered if it was the sound of the world shredding apart. And that is a breadcrumb.
Oh, yeah. I mean, also, like, the fact that she couldn't move her legs until she sees him and then takes off running to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just shows, like, she will put her entire body is reacting to him.
I do have that question later on.
Oops, sorry.
Oh, no. We might as well talk about it now. How the hell did she get her leg out? Wasn't she just pinned?
You know, you bring great questions, Amy. And I feel like we're both going to continue to bring great questions to this section. You know, we could pretend that maybe the explosion pushed it off.
Yeah.
However, why isn't her leg broken?
Yeah.
You're telling me it's pinned but not crushed?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And when you're in the heat of the moment, you just accept these things. You don't think about it.
Yeah.
But continuity.
I mean, this is what we're doing. you know, don't write a book without expecting two random women to analyze it and make a podcast out of it. Hunt takes the brunt of the blast and his wings are once again ripped off, shredded, because his poor wings just cannot get a break in this book. Quote, her hands began to shake. It wasn't a piece of ash. It was a gray feather. And the fact that his feather is associated with ash, and once again, they've been ripped apart, it reminds me of the phoenix in Ashes, who rises from the ashes.
You get snaps.
Oh, thank you.
So good.
Thank you. And that is Hunt. Because if you think about it, Hunt's journey is about rebirth, right? Mm-hmm. He started off with just him and his mom. And then he has a new life with Shahar. And then he has a new life as a fallen. And then he has a new life with Bryce, right? Mm-hmm. His journey is about rebirth.
Yeah.
Bryce's journey is about pushing through.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's our little phoenix.
Ka-ka. Ka-ka.
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
Hunt is our sexy chicken.
Oh, put him in some lingerie.
Yeah. Hunt is our sexy phoenix.
I could see him wearing a banana hammock.
I'm already seeing it in my head.
I do too.
I already have it there. He is our sexy phoenix chicken lingerie.
There's this moment when Bryce is trying to save Hunt by doing nothing except holding him. And there's...
Sorry. That came in so shady. There's a moment where Bryce does jack shit, decides to let him die. Fuck you, bitch. But let me continue.
Sorry. I was going to let it slide.
So we have this lazy ass person. Sorry, continue.
She's panicking. I give her that. She's holding on to Hunt, trying to will him to live. And there's this beautiful, beautiful moment of symbolism that I never realized until this reread. Quote, Bryce couldn't stop her tears as they dropped onto Hunt's cheeks, cleaning away the blood in clear tracks. Now, let's recall at the time of Hunt's betrayal, Bryce is the only one who drew blood from Hunt when she threw the white opal, aka her joy, at him, and blood came from his temple. In this moment, she is cleaning away that blood. Aww. Her tears are like a baptism and washing away his sins. And it's purifying him and it's a mark of her forgiveness.
Yeah, so maybe she's not being lazy. She's busy baptizing him. She's doing her work, Amy. We go into Rune's point of view really briefly. And I just love how I think he's changed so much in this book, even though he's not in the foreground, he's more in the backdrop. Like, he's just not as main of a character as we get with Bryce and Hunt, but he's done a lot of his own growth. And you think about the Rune at the beginning of this book, who was just getting stoned all the time. And yeah, he was the leader of the Ox, but it didn't really matter to him and blah, blah, blah. Well, right now, here he is in a helicopter crash that they just casually mention.
Yep.
And he's busy categorizing everyone's injuries. Like, you hear about Amelie, you hear about Hypaxia and Flynn and everyone. And then when it comes to him, wait.
Fury, not Hypaxia.
Oh, right. Fury. Someone. People.
Someone not worth remembering.
The savagery from Amy today. I appreciate. Anyway, so Rune is categorizing everyone except for himself, quote, and Rune, he didn't even bother to think about his own wounds, not as the smoke-filled, burning night became laced with approaching snarls. And I think we're starting to see signs of a leader when it comes to Rune, and he hasn't been a true leader this book because Bryce inspires him, and she's also taking the burden of being a Starborn, and her words are what fuels him, quote, tell Rune I forgive him for all of it. The words echoed through Rune's blood. She's the one who grounds him in his own way. But even here, like, he's a leader, but he's so cool with not being the leader.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, go, baby sister.
Yeah. And he's always said that Bryce was the bright spot in his life. And you can see that here. You can see how she draws out the best in him.
Yeah.
And one of his quotes at the end, when they see each other after the final battle, always makes me cry.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple points in this episode where I'm playing this really fun game called Will I Cry while I read a quote. I'm not going to lie, it's not looking great.
Yeah, yeah.
In order to save Hunt, Bryce claims her title for the very first time and all that she is. Quote, I am Bryce Quinlan. I am Starborn Fey and I bear Luna's horn in my body. It's very much like, again, she's claiming her light. She's doing, like, this is the light. She is Fey. She is Starborn. And, you know, even though she's claiming it right now, she's not fully claiming it. And we'll mm-hmm. see her claim it more in the next book. But, you know, we're getting those seedlings here. But I also love this concept of her asking for help in this barren wasteland of a city mm-hmm. and no one coming to help.
Yeah.
Now, the question is, could anyone have come to help? Or did people choose not to come to help?
Right.
There's six gates. There's got to be someone who could have helped. Which I don't blame people for being too afraid to.
Yeah, but in some ways it also reflects, I think, something that Hunt struggles with later on in this series, which is the selfishness of other people. People uh-huh. are out to save their own skin.
Yeah.
And you see that in this moment. Bryce is only asking for six other people.
Yeah.
Out of an entire city. Now, granted,
one person. She only needs one person.
She needs one at every gate, I thought.
This is when I think she's decided. I think she's decided to make the drop at this point.
Ew.
In my mind, that's how I interpreted this, was like her real, because she says, my light, my first light will heal.
Oh, I see.
She just needs one person, and you have six gates. You need one person to come. But like, it does add layers to her wanting to save the city.
Yeah.
Too, because it's also like, well, fuck you all.
Right.
And she doesn't ask for help in general.
Right.
Like, this is not something that she's used to. So it does show that Hunt's also changed her, too.
Yeah, I agree.
I also just like to imagine, because Rune says that he can hear her. Mm-hmm. Imagine how devastated he is.
I know.
Trying to fight to get to her at this moment.
Of course he would want to anchor her.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get that opportunity.
Uh-uh. And he's like, he could hear her and he's a half mile away and he is just fighting to get there. Yeah, it hurts. Bryce tells Hunt she loves him, but SJM won't let us hear those words from her lips. Quote, and then she said it, the three words that meant more than anything. She whispered them into his ear, sending them with all she had left in her. We don't hear it. We don't hear I love you. We don't even see them written mm-hmm. on the page. Mm-hmm. They're just called three words. And, you know, maybe it's meant for book two, because that's when we find out.
Spoiler.
They're mates. And it's like, or maybe it's because it's too intimate to hear. There were moments in the ACOTAR series where she did this, where mm-hmm. there were too many moments that were so intimate between Rhys and Farrah that mm-hmm. we weren't privy to.
Yeah.
Is this the beginning of that? So yeah. I just want to know what your thoughts were.
No, I definitely agree with your thoughts that it was too intimate. But I also, because we know how Sky and Breath is going to start, they've been wanting to have sex. They're going to get deprived of sex at the end of this book. They're not going to have sex for however many months at the beginning of Sky and Breath.
And she won't tell him she loves him until she's for sure, not because it's life or death.
Right, exactly. So I understand why it's kept off the page, because in some ways the narrative is respecting that hesitancy on her part mm-hmm. and that need for a surety.
Yeah. And it also gives us something to look forward to in book two. Yeah,
absolutely. And it's at this moment that Bryce hears Danica, first in her heart and then through the heart gate. And SJM knew what the fuck she was doing.
Yeah.
And when she hears Danica say, light it up, which is a beautiful tie back to the beginning of the book. I find it curious, though, that when we hear Danica say light it up, quote, the onyx stone of the bone quarter glowed like a dark star. Now, I know this is indicating that Danica's in the bone quarter. However, it looks like a dark star, which is like Bryce's opposite. And Danica was in some ways Bryce's opposite, right? And in this moment, it's kind of a alive versus dead, light versus dark.
Mm-hmm.
But I also wondered why an onyx stone, because onyx makes me think of the Autumn King's crown. And it's just, I know it's a good visual, but I'm so confused by the visual because I'm trying to read into it.
Because we haven't seen onyx really described throughout this book mm-hmm. that often that I can think of. I think maybe when it comes to the Oracle.
Yeah, right.
But recently we got the Autumn King.
Right.
I'm just saying it's because there should have been more to him. There we go.
You said it.
Yep.
Before we move on to chapter 92, I want to talk just about magicfulness.
The magicfulness? Gasp! Rune said.
The magnificence and beauty of the symbolism in this whole sequence. Now, I always knew that this book had really good bookends, that a lot of what happens in the beginning of the book is reflected at the end of the book. There's a lot of planning on SJM's part, but the symbolism of all of this really, really got to me this time around. So we're at the Heart Gate, where Bryce was at the start of the book with Danica, carefree, and so were all the depictions of the area surrounding the Heart Gate. Now we're at the Heart Gate, where Bryce is in the greatest battle that's taking place. And I would say she's avoided the Heart Gate as much as possible mm-hmm. in this book between the beginning and the end.
And now she can't get enough of it.
Now she can't get enough. She's reunited here both with Hunt and Danica, whom she completely forgives mm-hmm. for the lies and everything that they've put her through. But in this moment, they're reunited. She forgives them. She loves them the most. They're the only two people who have ever unlocked her heart to access her starlight. And in being reunited with them, she must also face the darkness in her own heart by doing the drop at the Heart Gate. And she has to rely on them to physically restart her physical heart.
And there's just like layers upon layers of symbolism.
There's just so much. It's so good because I don't feel like it's a slap in the face.
No.
I don't feel like it's heavy handed.
I think it helps that all we're doing is crying.
Yeah, That's fair.
I think you can get away with it because of the drama of the moment.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. If this was in the middle of the book, I would have been like, gag me.
Yeah, it's like, I think subtlety requires for subtle moments. Uh-huh. We're in a big moment.
Yeah.
We're a hot mess.
Yeah, yeah.
I need you to shove this down my throat right now.
That's fair. No subtlety required. And then we get to what may be more famous, or just as famous as Rune Danin, Crown Prince of the Velbar and Fae, at the start of chapter 92. You ready?
Go ahead.
Light it up, Danica. Light it up.
It helps that we did it together because I probably would cry.
If you have not listened to the Audible version of this book, you need to listen to it. The narrator, I love the way she portrays Danica. And yeah. I love the way she portrays this entire sequence.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It's like you can just hear the joy because at this moment, no, we're not going to cry. Okay.
She's slapping her face.
At this moment, Bryce is described as laughing.
Yeah.
And even as she throws herself into it, her and Danica are both laughing because they're mm-hmm. reunited. And this is such a sad, beautiful moment, and they're just so happy to be reunited.
Yeah. And then just before the drop, quote, and soul to soul with the friend whom she had not forgotten, the friend who had not forgotten her even in death, Bryce made the drop. I'm gonna cry. I wrote in my notes, just typing this gave me full body chills.
I was like reading this yesterday, and then I looked at Nicole, who's my roommate, and I was like, I need to go to my room right now so I can continue reading this. And then as I was typing it, finishing up notes this morning, Amy came over so we could go walk over to brunch. I just like walked out and gave you a hug. I was like, I need a hug right now. This was a lot.
It is. And it's like you said, we're going to see them laughing and howling, and you can feel the joy, even though this is a really dangerous thing that they're about to do.
I have not been a Danica fan this entire book.
Yeah.
I think Danica has lied. I mean, I don't think I know. I think we have facts on that. But like, I haven't been a Danica has been a good friend person. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I don't feel their friendship. I just haven't been the biggest Danica fan. SJM and her writing this is so talented.
Yeah.
That now here I am crying that they're being reunited.
Yeah.
And I'm not even a huge Danica fan. Like, yeah. That's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. On the flip side, people at the summit are watching this take place. And I found it curious because we never get Declan's point of view again, other than these last sequence of chapters. But we get it from his point of view because it has to come from someone and Hunt is not there and neither is Rune.
Yep.
But this is what we get from Declan's point of view. Quote, an untethered solo drop, utter free fall. Bryce might as well have leapt from a cliff and hoped to land safely. And when I read this, it struck me that Bryce, once upon a time, considered jumping off a building because of her grief about Danica and the way she had been treated in the aftermath of Danica's death. And she did it because she wanted to be reunited with Danica, and Juniper prevented her from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the drop, this untethered drop, is a redo at that.
Yeah.
From other people's point of view, she basically just ended her own life.
Yep.
Like, there's no coming back from this because she is not anchored.
Mm-hmm.
But Bryce makes that jump and she finds exactly what she was always hoping to find at the bottom of the jump, which was Danica.
I also, you can look at it as being a mirror to Hunt, because right before this, Hunt jumped out of the helicopter to save her.
Uh-huh.
And she just jumped the drop to go save him.
Uh-huh. Yes, you're right.
There's just so many metaphors when it comes to jumping.
Yeah, there is.
SJM, queen of bringing things back into full circle. Hypaxia notes what the plaque says, quote, the power shall always belong to those who give their lives to the city. The plaque is a blessing. And this is something that we heard at the beginning of this book, but nothing about it being like a blessing, right? But we got a little be like, hey, tons and tons of people have come and given some of their power. And then Declan thinks, quote, people of every house, every race, millions and millions of drops of power fueled this solo drop. I forget that this power isn't hers.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they made a big point that her power isn't power. It's just light.
Yeah.
I don't know if I like that.
Like, you always wanted her to be secretly powerful.
Yeah.
I disagree. But I'm not going to talk about it for a couple chapters. We're going to circle back to this.
Okay. And I guess... Yeah, I think it's just, and I'll have, and again, I said think, so you don't have to disagree. No, yeah, I'm kidding. It's like, I'm just more of like, hey, about it. But
I think there's a purpose to it.
I think I know what you're talking about. We'll come back to it. I don't disagree, but I will tell you where my one hang up is.
Okay.
When we come to that.
Okay. As Bryce and Danica plunge into Bryce's power, or the power that Bryce is inheriting, we see golden light. And I think this is the true golden light. We've talked a lot about this in the last two episodes, that gold portrays goodness and rightness, and the Asteri fake that with the golden light from the brimstones and the golden armor of the Asterian Guard. But here we see golden light that is true golden light at the center of the universe, which in the middle of her heart. It's beautiful.
It's gorgeous. Bryce is already helping the city, right? She's already like going through and healing everyone in the city, but she's also going through her own healing journey. Quote, the quartz gates across the city began to glow red, then orange, then gold, then white. And I feel like those colors signify her own journey in this book. You know, you start off at the beginning with her grief, with her anger, with red, hesitation, orange, and then gold, love, and then
Taylor Swift.
Yeah, Truther. Taylor Swift, 100%. And then white with her own healing and her own power.
I love it.
Thank you. The next line reminds me a lot of ACOTAR when SJM paired opposites to describe something. Quote, it was joy and life and death and pain and song and silence. And I think we saw that with the Weaver, right? Yeah. Where it was like she was old and young.
Yeah.
I really do like this way of describing things when you have opposites of this and this. Mm-hmm. And I miss it. I miss it. I'm happy she brought it back.
Yeah, I am too.
Hi. We're going to pause this to come back to our regular scheduled program of Truther Watch. The Autumn King Truther. Let's put on our tinfoil hats.
They were always on. You have to remind us to take them off.
They're never coming off, baby. So with the help of millions and millions and millions of people's like little tiny drops of power, Bryce becomes more powerful than the Autumn King, but only slightly. And Declan is pretty smug about it, but the Autumn King tells him not to be, quote, because that girl may have used the gate's power to drop to unforeseen levels, but she will not be able to make the ascent. The Autumn King laughed mirthlessly, not from malice, Declan realized, but from something like pain. He'd never known the prick could feel such a thing. At one point, it's even described, his voice is even described as hoarse, like just like emotion behind it. And I know I keep like raging and being mad about like, you know, the fact that he was done so dirty. But in this moment, there is true grief from him.
Yeah. And I will never deny that I think the Autumn King cared about Bryce in his own way. Just like he cared about Bryce's mother in his own way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But one day. SJM wants us to believe that he's going to be a good guy.
Yeah. One day for CC3. I hope she left some clues in there for me because I'm struggling.
Yeah, I know. In chapter 93, Bryce is at the bottom of her heart, at the bottom of her drop, and sees Danica for the first time in 2 years. And like at the beginning of the book, I noticed that Bryce describes Danica's hair as having amethyst, sapphire, and rose streaks. And that demonstrates to us the value she sees in Danica. However, I want to remind us that halfway through this book, when Bryce was at her lowest and doubting Danica and doubting herself, she described the same streaks of color as purple, blue, and pink.
She toned it down when she was mad at her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now she's back to seeing her and
exactly
excitement and love and joy.
I thought you were making a hair pun. Like with toner.
Oh, no, I'm not that clever. not that hair clever, at least. No, my one thing. So whenever Amy and I, when we see like the sunset and it's like purple and pink and stuff, I'm and like, there's some blue.
It's a bye sky.
It's a bye sky. So I saw that. I was like, back to her bye hair. Bye sky.
I love it. Danica is bye. That's my truth.
100%. You cannot tell me otherwise.
Yep.
Danica isn't here for Bryce's bullshit. A.K.A. her mourning. Quote, Bryce blinked furiously. Because it got too hard without you. It was too hard without you. That's bullshit, Danica snarled. So you'll just give up on everything, Bryce? I'm dead. I am gone. The friend that I knew wouldn't have done that. So I was thinking a lot about that, of like the friend I knew wouldn't have done that. And does Danica believe that? Because the friend she knew, she thought needed synth initially.
Yeah.
No, and I get what she's saying. And I don't want to like take away where it's, I get the sentiment. I understand it. But it's just more of like, I think Bryce's spiral made sense for her.
Yeah. Yeah. So I agree with you. I feel both things. And I think both things can be true. I think that Bryce's spiral made sense for her. I think the aftermath of Danica's death and the way it went down makes sense for Bryce.
Mm-hmm.
However, I can see from Danica's point of view that she made friends with a half-human fae who didn't take shit from people and who just kind of barreled along in life.
Yeah.
Who did party, and maybe she was concerned about her wanting to do synth because it was just another drug. But I also think Danica saw a fighter in Bryce and saw the wolf in Bryce.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Danica's referring to.
Well, I mean, when I mentioned synth, I meant like initially Danica wanted Bryce to have synth.
Oh, yeah.
Because she was worried about her half-human friend that wasn't strong enough.
Right.
So, like, there was a moment of recognition of saying, like, she is weak on some level.
Oh, yeah.
So, it, you know, I'm not, like, caught up in the fact that I think this is, like, totally uncalled for.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like, she does say, like, I felt your pain.
Yeah.
I saw everything from here. If you saw everything from here, like, it wasn't just your death. It was the death of her, all of her friends, the death of being kicked out of the pack.
The way she was treated.
Yeah. And so it's like, you know, I get her sentiment. I'm not opposed it. I mean, I don't know how she's supposed to communicate all that in a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
It was just like a note that I saw.
Yeah, that's fair. We learn a lot about Danica's mentality, though, in one line, and I had to pull it out because it's such bullshit. And I'm going to say this is something you would do, Jack, but not to me.
Okay.
You would do it to other people.
All right.
That you don't care about.
Okay.
Right?
I don't know what you're saying.
Okay.
You left it in dark highlight, so I didn't look at it.
Quote, I didn't lie. I just didn't tell you.
Yeah.
You've said that kind of shit before.
Only to people I don't like.
Yeah, only to people you don't like.
That's true. That's true.
Because you know if you did it to me, I'd like rip your fingernails out.
Okay, that's uncalled for. I would never have done that to you. Also, like, I couldn't do it. I could not tell you.
Yeah, no, what, I know.
I had to keep a secret for a friend recently. And you and I both found out the secret at the same time. And I was like...
dying.
I was like, I don't like this. I don't like this at all.
I have to say, okay, Danica's bullshit aside, she continues to pull bullshit.
Yeah.
And I don't like... I feel Bryce's joy, and that's what makes me happy and sad. I understand why Danica is a shit friend, because mm-hmm. she pulls the Connor manipulative shit again, which she did at the beginning of the book. Even in death, Danica uses Connor to manipulate Bryce. Quote, Connor would have wanted more for you than this. He wouldn't have wanted you to stop fighting. Who gives a shit what Connor wants?
Even into her death, she's using the Connor card.
Well, I mean, I have to imagine that in death, Danica did not have an opportunity to mature.
She's had time.
She doesn't have... I mean, if she's just a spark of power, it's not like she's out there having life experiences or death experiences.
She's listening to all of her friends' pain.
Yeah,
that's enough experiences.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, fine. I'm convinced. It just makes me more mad at Danica.
Fair. Danica at one point even calls out Bryce for selling her soul for Danica's freedom. Quote, you didn't think I'd make it? She threw her a sharp, pained grin. Asshole. It's funny, right? Because it's like, you know, mm-hmm. oh, asshole. But like, clearly Danica's hurt by it.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that's a clue for book three.
Interesting.
If you know, you know.
Yeah.
Because you know, in theory, Danica knows.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is why what she's doing... I'm going to spoiler alert this. I think that's why she's okay giving up her last bit of soul here, because she's not giving up her last bit of soul. She's moving on to the other side.
Yeah.
Which she knows about.
Yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah. Just, you know, just thoughts. Danica reminds Bryce that she has someone worth living for, aka Hunt. And Bryce, you know, like coming in being like, oh, what? Hell no. Quote, you're really trying to convince me to make the ascent for a guy? Is Hunt Athalar really just some guy to you? And why is it somehow a mark against your strength to admit that there is someone who happens to be male worth returning to?
Danica makes a great point.
Yeah. Danica makes a great point because, one, it's okay to, like, fight for yourself and, like, to heal yourself. Like, you will always have to heal yourself. But it's okay to fight for someone you love, too.
Yeah, regardless of gender.
Gender, or if it's romantic love, or familial love, or friendship love. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's okay to say, like, I have someone worth living for. Again, your own healing and finding your own worth will always, always be number one and top priority. But the people in our life are worth it, too.
Well, if you have the right people in your life.
Yeah, that's fair. This is not a sign to go back to your ex-boyfriend. I've said that throughout this season, I've noticed. Yep. I like to imagine that there has been one person, at least this entire season, that's felt personally called out.
My gosh. Attacked.
I'd be like, what?
Right before Bryce has to decide to make the ascent, Danica says, quote, I'll be with you every step of the way. Even if you can't see me, I will always be with you. And I think this goes back to what you were saying earlier, that Danica knows what happens.
Yeah.
But also, it reminds us that for all the time that Bryce has felt alone, and Bryce thinks this later on, Danica's always been there. Every time she thought her friend was gone, thought that she was the only person in the world who understood, Danica was there with her. And yeah. It's my heart. It's a great farewell message.
Yeah. And I think, like, I'm someone who's lost people that I love and are very, very close to. And, you know, I understand the sentiment, like they are with you. And if you don't believe it, if you don't believe in an afterlife, I can only imagine, like, I don't know, that bums me out and stuff. You know, you just believe in ghosts if you can't go full afterlife, just something. But like, you know, I truly believe like our loved ones are with us.
Yeah.
And, you know, if Danica can't convince you, I don't know what can.
Yeah. At this point, I'm going to get into the conversation about Bryce's power, and I'm going to continue that conversation a little bit at the start of chapter 94. But here in 93, let's remember that Danica was described at the beginning of the book as potentially having more power than the Autumn King, and that she would only access that power after she made the drop. When Bryce drops into her power, and that power being the power of everyone in the gate who mm-hmm. left a drop of power, she finds Danica at the bottom.
Yeah.
Danica burns her last bit of spirit to help Bryce ascend. And now in my mind, it's because Danica's power is sufficient to make up for all the power that Bryce has dropped into. So Bryce dropped into everybody's power who gave up power, but it's Danica's power that Bryce back out.
No, I agree.
And I just think it's a beautiful metaphor for the strength of their love and friendship, that by sacrificing herself, she's able to get Bryce out of the deepest mm-hmm. possible well of power. Quote, the force that was Danica Fendier, the force that had given Bryce that boost upward, faded away into nothing. And what we'll see at the start of chapter 94, from Bryce's point of view, she knows that, quote, Danica had given over what remained of her soul, her power to get Bryce off the runway. And she acknowledges, she, quote, she had never been alone. She never would be, not with Danica in her heart and not with Hunt beside her. And I think this is why the clock for the drop stops at 0.003. So three zeros and the number three, because it takes Danica, Hunt, and Bryce to make a whole person.
My note is, there's no angel number for 0.003.
I didn't even bother trying.
I'm going to just say this so that I don't forget for later. So, well, going back into the conversation that you're saving for us to have in a moment about Danica's power or Bryce's power.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just me working things out in my head. Spoiler for book three. The fact that Bryce, again, isn't using her own power to get out of the ascent also kind of initially bummed me out, where I was like hoping for her own power because she ends up being so powerful in general. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, oh, wait, but that's actually not her power anyway. It's like Thea's and Helena's mm-hmm. and the other third one. So, I mean, I guess her entire thing has never been about her own power. She's mm-hmm. just always used others' power.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just working through my own.
Working through it.
Yeah, working Fair. Through it as I continue. Thank you for listening to part one of this week's episode of Book Talk for Book Talk. We encourage you to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platform. Tune in Thursday for part two, where we finish covering this week's chapters.
We would love to hear your thoughts based on today's conversation. You can submit your comments to our form at booktalkforbooktalk.com for a chance to have your feedback discussed during a future mini episode.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please visit our website, booktalkforbooktalk.com, to view our latest merch and learn about supporting the show through Patreon, Ko-Fi, or Venmo.
Bye.
Such a good summary of the end. I mean, not just because I...
Not just because you wrote it.
I wrote it, but like just in general, I'm like, ooh, chills.
Can I take a sip?
Yeah, I do too. Want to. Things of sips.